Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. We stand at a pivotal moment in space exploration. There are plans to further extend our reach into the solar system, and NASA's leading the way. An orbiting outpost, the International Space Station, is home to a crew of astronauts from across the world, conducting research and learning how to live and work in space. There are robotic explorers probing vast regions of the solar system, including the depths of interstellar space. NASA is also preparing for a challenging mission to capture and redirect an asteroid for human exploration, a stepping stone to future human exploration of Mars. While NASA and its international partners strive to achieve these exploration goals, we are also witnessing the birth of a new commercial space industry. What are NASA's key strategic goals? How is NASA expanding the boundaries of science, technology, and the imagination? And what is NASA doing to cultivate a risk-tolerant environment? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Charlie Bolden, Administrator of NASA. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Very good to be here. Thanks very much.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Paul, welcome.
Well, Michael, thank you. Charlie, great to see you.
Charlie, many of our listeners are quite familiar with NASA, but before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can provide us with a brief overview of the history and continuing evolution of this agency. How has NASA evolved since its inception?
We're the child of the original National Advisory Committee on Aeronautics, NACA, that I want to say NACA is about to be 100. If it were still around, it would be 100 years old. And NACA originally was put in place to advise the president and others on aeronautics, on how do we, okay, we've got this thing called an airplane. So how do we effectively use it and bring it up? And then all of a sudden in 1957, when President Eisenhower was president, people woke up one morning to hear this funny sound like a beep, beep, beep going overhead, and it was Sputnik. And that woke everyone up to the fact that as much as we, as important as airplanes were, there was something else coming, and it was spacecraft of some type. And President Eisenhower decided that he should establish an organization that would focus, in addition to aeronautics, on space. And so NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, was born with the 1958 National Space Act. And that was our birth. But to continue the legacy of NACA, and that's the Aeronautics Mission Directorate that is still one of our four mission directorates. So that was our birth. Heavily focused on competition, heavily focused on trying to catch up with the Soviets, because not only had they orbited an artificial satellite first, but with Yuri Gagarin's flight, they had become the first to put a human in space. So we were charging from behind immediately. And we started from there. We have changed significantly over time. We now don't, I don't view us, and I don't think anybody in NASA views us as being in competition with anyone, to be quite honest. The competition today in space is among corporations and companies. So it's a commercial competition. We have tried to, at least over the last 5 years since I've been the NASA administrator, we've tried to stoke that competition because we feel that what we want to do is get the cost for launches down and able to allow more people to get themselves and things into space. The hardest hurdle for space flight is launch cost, and it is what drove the market away from the United States. So we've kind of brought part of the market back with the advent of our commercial cargo program. We now have two American companies, SpaceX and Orbital, that send cargo to the International Space Station for us. Space Station has now launched a purely commercial satellite, communication satellite, to geosynchronous orbit. So that's something that was always the duty of a nation to do before. And so now private industry or commercial industry is engaged in it. So that's probably the biggest change.
And so with such a complex or interesting mission, could you give us a sense of the scale of operation now, the NASA of today?
Yeah, the NASA of today is a people organization of approximately 17 to 18,000 civil servants spread across the country at 10 NASA field centers, and then our little subordinate facilities. MISHU is one of the biggest down in New Orleans, belongs to the Marshall Space Flight Center. That's where it's like a huge production facility. It used to be where we produced the external tank for the space shuttle program. Today, if you go to Michoud, you will find what used to be a huge empty building today is teeming with business. We're building the core stage for our new heavy lift launch vehicle, building fuel tanks for it. Sierra Nevada, which is one of our commercial companies, one of our commercial partners out of Colorado, has actually moved a lot of the production of their Dream Chaser spacecraft, which is in competition to become one of the next vehicles to launch humans into space. They have subcontracted with Lockheed Martin. And so you've got the Lockheed Martin Sierra Nevada team there at Michoud. A lot of things going on there. Just outside of, not about 3 hours from where we sit in Washington, D.C., is the Wallops Flight Facility that belongs to Goddard. It is now a launch facility. We have always launched balloons and sounding rockets. We now launch big rockets. Orbital Sciences, one of our industry partners in carrying cargo to the International Space Station, launches their Antares rocket with the Cygnus spacecraft carrying cargo out of there. That's kind of the way we are today. The other part of the family is the, today, 40,000 or so contractors that supplement. They fill in where we have holes in our technical capabilities. So if I need a certain kind of people and I don't have them in the NASA civil service workforce, then we'll go out and we'll hire contractors to do that kind of work.
How's your budget?
This year, the fiscal year 14 budget is $17.6 billion. The president's submission for 2015, which is what I'm supporting, defending now, is for 17.5, so a slight reduction. But people have to remember, we get criticized by Congress because the president asked for less than they appropriated last year. We are still under sequester. So we got 2-year relief from sequester, and the president has to abide by the Budget Control Act. So he actually had less money to distribute across the federal agencies, and everybody took a fair share cut. Mine was about $185 million, which took me from 17.6 down to 17.5. But we effectively used that amount. That's a lot of money. It's not as much as I would like to have. There is no head of any agency that wouldn't tell you they could use more, and I'm not gonna be any different. But I think we have plans to use it strategically, such that we will be an agency that continues to lead the world in exploration and make the American citizens proud.
Charlie, could you tell us about your role as the administrator of NASA? Roles, responsibilities, and maybe give us a little day in the life of the NASA administrator.
No day and no 2 days are alike. I've been the NASA administrator now since July of 2009, and I have a lot of my employees who shadow me, you know, the mid and low level potential new future leaders of the agency, and so we have a process that we try to get senior leadership to take someone on for a day, and they just go with you as if they're your shadow. I always tell them, I said, okay, you're going to get to see a unique day, because I can't remember in more than 5 years now that I've ever had 2 days that were alike. They're always, almost always, very busy. You know, I think what you consider to be your duties, the duties of the NASA administrator are relatively dully spelled out in our governing directives and everything. But I consider myself to be the president's chief advisor on civil space. That is my job. His chief advisor on military space, you know, is the Secretary of Defense, and that's delegated down to the Secretary of the Air Force as the executive agent for space. And then the intelligence community, generally headed up by the head of the National Reconnaissance Office. So the three of us, as a matter of fact, in order to make it a complete coordinated package, we usually meet quarterly in what we call a summit. And we talk about space and how we interact with each other, how we affect each other, and so that none of us does something that will dramatically impact the way that the other is able to carry out their particular duties. So primarily the primary space advisor to the president and Congress, because we advise them. I am the people's conduit into the administration and the Congress for their inputs on where they think the nation should be going in terms of space. We do lots of things. We do town hall meetings. We do fora. We do seminars. We'll talk a little bit later about the Asteroid Redirect initiative. That has been heavily influenced by public input. We've put forward the basic concept, and then we went to the public around the world, actually, and got their input. So we're the conduit for those ideas to the administration and the Congress.
So, Charlie, what are some of the challenges you face in your current role, and how have you sought to address them?
You know, because I think we are a people organization. I started out by saying that. So my number one challenge is to take care of my people, to make sure that every NASA employee, to the greatest extent I can, feels valued, feels that they're making a contribution. And as I try to emphasize to them whenever I talk to them, so that every single day they go home feeling that life is better for somebody on this planet because they work that day. It's a big deal to me. It's really important for me to make sure that all of our people feel like they're contributing to make the world a better place. Our vision, for example, is, in essence, it says we reach for new heights to reveal the unknown so that things we do and learn make life better for humanity. And I think we do that. I think we do it every single day, whether it's in aeronautics or in human exploration or science or space technology. And I just want our folk to feel that. The next challenge is, believe it or not, it's trying to be a mediator between, I'm a part of the administration, but somebody's got to step in the middle of the administration and the Congress and say, okay, you know, we need to come together on some of these things, which I find that to be among the most difficult parts of what I have adopted as my job, is to try to mediate between the Congress and the administration, understand what both are saying. And so it's a position I've adopted. It's not one that everyone in the administration will agree with. They will tell you that I'm misplaced or I'm misguided in my duties. But if we want to have a robust and effective space program that remains the best in the world, if I can't bring harmony between the administration and the Congress, then we have no space program. So that I adopted that as a personal challenge for me.
So, Charlie, given your experience as a pilot, correct, as a general, now as an administrator, I'd be interested to understand from your perspective, what makes an effective leader?
I have my own leadership philosophy, and my number one metric for success is, if I walk away, if I go away and for some extended period of time, will anyone know I'm gone? And if nobody knows that I'm gone, I think I've done a pretty good job of leadership, because I've built a team that knows what's expected. They know what to do. They're very confident in their ability to do it. And if they can't find me, they don't worry about it, because they know, okay, if he were here, this is what he would do. And, you know, you're never satisfied, but I'm very happy that if I walked away for, I don't know how much, an extended period of time, NASA would not miss a step, because I inherited a pretty good leadership team, and I've tried my best to kind of, you know, mold and shape them in a fashion that I could work with, and I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that. So that's sort of my number one criteria for a leader is, can you work yourself out of a job such that people are confident and knowledgeable and go forward doing the things that you would direct if you were there? The other thing is, do people feel valued? You know, we have a lot of managers in an organization like NASA, people who are extremely technically qualified and technically competent. They're among the best engineers in the world, but they may not be able to lead at all. There's a big difference between management and leadership. You know, management is based on the bottom line. What are the results that are coming from my efforts? I actually changed our performance appraisal system in NASA such that the focus for senior executive service, for the senior leadership level in NASA, was no longer results, something called results driven. Yes, they do have to get the job done, but there are two things that I said are more important, and they are both people things, leading people and influencing change. If you can't do those, in my book, then you're not a very good leader. You know, everybody needs somebody that they will get behind and follow, even if it means into dangerous places and even the threat of death. That's the extreme in the military. So you've got to know how to follow. So if you don't know how to follow, you can't lead anyone, because you won't know, you know, what is expected of you. How do I convince somebody that they should follow me? So I guess, you know, leading people and influencing change are two of the critical things for me as a leader.
What are NASA's key strategic goals? We will ask its administrator, Charlie Bolden, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.